very special thanks to our $5 fans, Matt Howey, Kyle Stevens, Zach Spear, Nathan No Last Name, Dustin Younce, Nathan Dyer, Tonks Konechny, M. Jason, Jared Spool, Donnie Brower, Dennis Bailey, Kevin Cup, Pavan Rajam, Stuart Scott Curran, Andy Davies, and Jason Cosper.
That's a long list.
Long list of dudes.
Yeah, what's up with that?
That's just our target demographic.
I don't want that to be our target demographic. Where are our ladies at?
I don't know.
And our...
Doing better things.
And our gender fluid individuals.
I don't know. I think that maybe people who have all the time to listen to the podcasts are dudes. No, I don't know. Ladies listen to murder podcasts, right?
Because they fantasize about murdering the dudes who are giving us $5.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to myself. You reading any good books lately?
I'm actually reading a fantastic book, which is related to what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Why Women Have Better Sex Under Socialism.
All right. Tell me what you're learning so far.
Well, I just started reading it, about a quarter of the way in. It's by Kristen Godsey, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. G-H-O-D-S-E-E. She's a professor of Russian and Eastern European Studies at UPenn.
Wow.
Back in my hometown of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So the deal here, and I mean, she goes to great lengths at the beginning to explain that she's not, you know, advocating everything that happened under the Soviet regimes.
Mm-hmm.
But one good thing about it was that women were paid equally.
Ooh,
as men.
That's fun.
And I mean, part of that was that you were forced to have a job. I mean, everyone had a job.
Mm-hmm.
And you were all paid the same.
That's nice.
Yeah.
How progressive.
Yeah. And she tells, I'll tell a story that she tells early in the book about how she's going to dinner with a friend of hers who she's known forever. And she's getting ready to go to dinner at her friend's house and overhears her friend and her husband having an argument. Her friend's a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
She overhears the two of them having an argument because her friend's husband is telling her that she spent too much money already this month, so mm-hmm. she cannot have any more. And no, she cannot have their joint checking account credit card
mm-hmm.
for this evening out that she's having with the author. And I mean, under capitalism, I mean, there's a lot of women who choose to work, to not work, to, you know, stay at home, raise kids. And I'm not slamming that choice, but it puts them in an economic position in relationship to the person who is bringing in the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of indentured servitude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I mean, a lot of people end up staying in relationships because they've given up their financial independence.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're not putting any money away towards retirement when you're, you know, a homemaker, let's say.
Yeah. That's such a part of a much larger problem.
Much larger problem. Anyway, the book is Why Women Have Better Sex Under Socialism.
Cool.
By Kristen Godsey. Kristen R. Godsey.
I started reading your book. I think I'm like two chapters in.
I'm a
slow reader now. I used to be a fast reader. Now I'm a slow reader.
How, what do you think so far?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah?
Yeah. You're a very good writer, Mike.
Thanks, Jesse.
You have a lot of good points. Really makes people think.
You know, my favorite compliment is when people tell me that it reads like I'm talking to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when people say that.
Yeah, and writing in a way that sounds like you're talking to somebody is so difficult because it does very much sound like your voice, but I know that like you can't just sit in front of a computer and type what you would literally say, because that actually sounds a lot dumber when it's in written form. But yeah, you're really good. I am enjoying it so far.
I mean, a lot of people write books to prove how smart they are, mm-hmm. which is a horrible reason. It's like a horrible thing to do to your readers. I want to write books that convince my readers of how smart they are.
I like that.
Because, you know, otherwise, why the hell would you read something?
Yeah. I mean, I read the, is it You're My Favorite Client?
The green one.
The green one.
Yeah.
And what was the first one?
Design is a Job.
Design is a Job. Yeah. I think I read You're My Favorite Client. I don't think I've read Design is a Job
yet.
That's
fine.
Yeah. But I really like it. Good job on books.
Thank you.
So now, okay. So your first two books, you had like Brown Book and Green Book.
Brown Book and Green Book.
Yeah. Now your third book is a little Red Book. It's a little different this time.
It's a little different.
Yeah. It looks different. There's like a picture on the cover.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit thicker than the other ones.
It's a little bit thicker. It's a little bigger.
So how different was it writing, you know, your third book? Just like visually, it looks like a very different book. It reads like a different book. How was the process for writing that different from the first two?
Well, the process of writing it wasn't that different. Mm-hmm. What happened was after writing it. Mm. I mean, this book kicked my ass because I had like a whole nother series of jobs to do after writing it. Mm-hmm. Like the first two, I wrote them for a book apart. Lovely, lovely people. And so I had an editor, two different editors that I worked with, one on each book. I wrote the book. I handed it into the editor. The editor would make all of the changes that they had to make the book actually legible. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go through and, you know, deal with those edits. And they're very good. And at the end, we had like a finished manuscript. And some very nice people typeset it and did all the other stuff. And a couple months later, a box of books showed up at my door.
So fun.
Yeah.
This one,
I got to do all of the stuff on the other side of writing it.
Yikes. That sounds very complicated. Was it?
It kind of was and it kind of wasn't.
Interesting.
It was a little scary because, mm-hmm. You know, you're done with the book and you just want to fuck off.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I fully understand that. That's like, basically what I've been doing for the last 2 months since my conference ended is fucking off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine if, you know, a week after your conference ended, you had a second conference.
Well, that did happen to me because I did a conference a month before mine and it was both, you know, individually as projects is wonderful, but oh my God, it's terrible.
It kicks your butt, right?
It's more than that. It burns your soul. Yes.
So this book was self-published, mm-hmm. which means that I had to figure out how to get it made. I had to typeset it. I had to lay it out. I had to make a book out of it. Mm-hmm. And then figure out how to get it to people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talked to a bunch of publishers before making that decision because my goal was to have somebody publish it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, part of that is ego.
Yeah.
You want to be able to say that, you know, you're
like a chosen.
Yeah. You've been person. Chosen. You've yeah. been chosen by, you know, the old gods of publishing. Mm-hmm. Your words are, you know, worthy of being put in somebody's publishing schedule. That didn't work out.
All right.
That's weird. They didn't know where to put me.
Interesting. That's also kind of a rite of passage is getting like denied by publishers, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
You remember Dune?
Do I remember it?
I mean, have you ever read Dune?
I haven't read it. I know what it is.
Yeah, I haven't read it either.
Yeah, okay. So do you remember it?
No, not really. I mean, there was a horrible movie made about it. But Dune was famously turned down by like almost every publishing house in New York and then eventually picked up by God, I wish I remember their name, but it was a publisher who did auto manuals.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Like when you buy a used car and you need a manual to go with the car.
Yeah.
They're the ones who would make that. And they took a chance on the book because they liked the vehicles that were in the story.
Aw. So somebody cool was working at that company.
Yeah. And they figured, well, what do we got to lose?
Yeah.
And they published it.
Mm-hmm.
J.K. Rowling got published by Scholastic.
Who's J.K. Rowling again?
Little Harry oh, yeah. Potter.
I'm a Slytherin. What are you?
Huffledork. I don't know. Mm. How do you figure that out?
Well, I mean, you can look inside of your heart, and if you like, you know, want to be in one of the houses, the Sorting Hat will kind of place you based on like where your heart is. But the way you find it out is to go to J.K. Rowling's official website, Pottermore, and take a test.
Pot or more?
Yes, pot or more.
Pot or more.
Yes. Dot biz.
What are the four houses?
Hufflepuff, Slytherin, Ravenclaw, and Gryffindor.
So how would you categorize each of them?
Hufflepuff. So Gryffindor, they're like the jocks.
They're like the good kids.
They're like, like jocks. They're athletic and brave.
Like the Lisa Simpsons? Or is that too nerdy?
I never watched The Simpsons. I wasn't allowed to.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
After this podcast, we're going to sit and we're going to watch every single episode.
All right. Like, Luke Skywalker is probably a Gryffindor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, I'm brave and I know how to use a thing. Ravenclaw is like the bookish ones. They're the smart ones.
So those are the Lisa Simpsons.
Yes, those are the Lisa Simpsons.
So like librarians.
She plays like an instrument, right?
A students.
Yeah, yeah. Smart kids.
People in band.
Slytherin are, if you read the books, we're so off topic right now. Slytherins are like the...
When are we on topic?
I don't know. I guess we're still talking about books, right?
So Slytherin's like the kids who go get high during gym class.
Slytherin, like, they're supposed to be like the evil ones, but the power-hungry ones. I really just look at it as like a...
Oh, you know, no, if you're smoking weed, you're not power hungry.
Oh, you can...
You're snack hungry.
You can be both. Take it from me.
Okay.
And then Hufflepuff is like the miscellaneous. They're like the, I think, the loyal. Hufflepuff are the stoners, probably. They're the ones who are just like in it to have a nice time and like hang out with their friends. And they're not brave or athletic or exceptionally smart or evil. So it's the other kids.
Books.
Harry Potter houses. Evil, Hufflepuffs, stoners, bleachers.
So what do you think I am?
What are you? I think that you are like a combo Gryffindor Hufflepuff.
Oh, man. Not even so zero Slytherin?
I think that you could be Slytherin. But I see you as like a brave person, Mike.
How?
Because you're always like going after people on Twitter for being bad.
Oh, that's so easy, though.
Talking about ethics and like, I don't know.
You sit down and you tap a keyboard. That's not courage.
It's more courage than a lot of other people have.
Well.
What are you self-identifying? Do you want to be a Slytherin too?
No, I want to be in the same house as you if we're going to hang out and like at Wizard College.
Well, then just like internalize it. And then when the Sorting Hat is on your head, he'll be like, you can be in Slytherin.
I mean, if that's like, I don't know.
I think Slytherin.
Why
is
are we
the
going
cool
to
kids.
Wizard College?
I don't know.
It's more like Wizard High.
Yeah, it's like a high school.
So where do they go after that?
Into the workforce.
So wizards don't go to college.
Maybe. I don't think so. I think that maybe they just like continue their training elsewhere.
I mean, like, so that they kind of explains like, so that, you know, they're not like walking around with a ton of like wizard college debt hanging over their head.
Oh no. They got magic.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what you need to pay off your student loans is fucking magic.
Right? I don't have student loans because I dropped out of college.
High five.
High five. I know.
Yeah. I'm old enough that I went to school when it was affordable.
Yeah, and useful.
Yeah.
Now. So I want to know more about your book.
Oh.
So you were we were talking about people getting rejected from publishers,
J.K. Rowling. Here's what's amazing. We actually sat down before recording.
And we're like, this is what we're going to talk about.
And said, okay, we have a topic and we're going to stay on topic. And that lasted, what, a minute and a half?
Hey, we haven't stopped talking about books yet. We're still fine.
All right.
Okay, so examples of other self-publishers. Whoever wrote 50
J.K.
Shades
Rowling
of
Grey. Wasn't self-published.
Oh, not self-publishers. I'm sorry, rejected from publishers.
But she was rejected by a ton of publishers until she got to Scholastic. Do you remember, I mean, and who the hell knew what Scholastic was before this? Except, do you remember, I don't know if this happened to you, but I mean, I had it and then my kid had it when he was in school, but you would get like the Scholastic book club shit that showed up every month.
Oh, book fairs.
Yeah. That's
them.
I
love book fairs.
Yeah.
I didn't even really buy books. I got like cat posters and stuff. Oh, the Scholastic book fairs. I want them to happen still. Why aren't there book fairs, like stupid book fairs like that anymore?
That'd be cool. And get like puffy stickers.
Yeah. Should do that here.
That does sound like a good idea. Anyway, that's what Scholastic was known for before they agreed to publish Harry Potter.
Good job, Scholastic.
Yeah, no shit. So yeah, anyway, I talked to a bunch of publishers. The design publishers that I talked to were like, where are the pictures? It's weird to have design books without pictures. Mm-hmm. And I was like, doesn't need pictures.
Yeah.
And then general purpose. Or popular publishers were like, why the fuck would we publish a design book? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can see that side of it more than I see the design publishing side. Yeah. And then lefty publishers were like, it's a design book. So they didn't want to touch it either. And the one publisher who was really interested and probably would have done it told me that they could publish it. Fall of 2020.
Wow, that's so far out.
Well, there's two speeds. Mm-hmm. I learned so much about publishing doing this. So the publishing industry is more fucked up than the tech industry right now.
How can be?
Right? They have absolutely no idea how to make money.
Mm-hmm.
They're gouging the fuck out of libraries with ebooks. You know how do you have a library card?
I don't have a library card.
Well, okay. That's all right. So libraries have ebooks now.
This is what I've heard.
Yeah.
And there's apps and stuff, right?
Yeah. So however, if you want to read something that just came out or that's really popular, you're going to get put on a waiting list for the ebook, which sounds really weird, right? Why would there be a waiting list for an ebook?
It's digital.
Right. Except the reason that there's a waiting list for an ebook is that publishers charge libraries
per digital copy.
And the amount that they charge them is insane.
That's not nice.
Insane.
Why are they going after the libraries?
Because they know that libraries have to have these digital copies
to stay alive.
And God bless libraries.
God bless libraries. And I'm God sorry bless for librarians. Not having a card. Yes.
You know what? We're going to go get cards.
Okay.
Because I'm ashamed to say that my card expired.
We're such bad citizens of the world.
We really are. I like buying books.
I like buying books too.
Yeah.
But libraries sound fun.
Right.
I used to love going to the library when I was a kid because it was like a store where everything was free.
I think that's part of it. I mean, I grew up without any money.
Yeah.
And I discovered this building where people would just let you have books.
Yeah.
And you could take them home.
Yeah.
And my God, that library card was like the most important thing in my world.
You know, part of the reason I don't go to libraries or I haven't been to a library in San Francisco yet. It's like, I like the style of library that I grew up with, which is a very, very small library.
Uh-huh.
It was much less intimidating. It was like, you know, the size of your office. And so less to choose from. But I think I've stepped foot inside of like the big San Francisco Public Library once. And it's just like, I don't know what to do.
Well, we have really nice small, I mean, North Beach.
Does North Beach have one?
Branch down here is
I don't think the Tenderloin's got a library.
It might.
It might. But I think that it's too close. I think that my closest library is the big one.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah, that's the Tenderloin Library.
Yeah.
It's too large.
It's a very large library. You know who's got a really nice library?
Who?
Austin.
Oh, really?
Austin has a brand new public library. Mm-hmm. It's down by the river,
mm-hmm.
Lady Bird Lake or Town Lake or whatever the hell they call it now. It was Town Lake when I lived there. Anyway, they have a brand new library. It's amazing. There's like a whole open air seating place with like really comfy chairs in the shade. You can just grab books and go spend an afternoon.
Sounds magical.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Our library is not that nice.
Oh. Why are we talking about libraries again? We're talking about publishing.
Publishers. Publishers
and
Gouge libraries.
Okay.
Publishers Gouge libraries.
We're going to get there.
Publishing is screwed up.
Nobody knows what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah. So I would get on the phone with potential publishers and they'd say, okay, let's talk about a marketing plan. And I'd say, sure, that sounds great. That's, you know, one of the things I would expect from a publisher. And their first question was always, how many Twitter followers do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say, is the marketing plan me tweeting a lot? Yes.
So you market yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, what it all came down to is I didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to take too long. So there's two speeds in publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Either you just got fired from the Trump administration and we can have your book out in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Or you're everybody else and your book will come out like a year after you've finished editing it.
And is that because they're understaffed? It's like, what is it that causes it to take so long?
Well, so I could be wrong on so many things here.
Yeah, we're all just guessing.
Yeah. I believe that the publishing calendar is twice a year. There's like the spring releases and the fall releases.
Like fashion.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So you've got two slots mm-hmm. during the year for your book to come out. So it's not like a rolling thing. So that limits opportunities. And there's only so many books that a publisher can put out because,
mm-hmm.
You know, staffing, what presses can handle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you got to get slotted into one of those spots.
Mm-hmm. And then the spots get filled up.
But, you know, if you're like... There's like emergency slots mm-hmm. for, you know.
For people from the Trump administration and right. The Kardashians.
Exactly. There's a Kardashian slot, a permanent Kardashian slot. Also, anybody who's been on The Bachelor can have a book out.
I don't watch those shows.
You know Mike Isaac?
I know the name.
He's the New York Times reporter. He wrote a book about Uber.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out in September.
Uh-huh. Oh.
That book was finished like... He's my neighbor, so I've been hanging out with him and talking about this book.
Uh-huh.
And he finished this book like 5 years ago.
Did Uber IPO?
Uber IPO'd after Mike had finished editing his book. And holy shit, that would have been a great time for that book to come out.
Yeah, he should have just had Lyft publish it.
I'm sure it's a great book, and I encourage you all to read it. But holy shit, if it had come out before that IPO hit. And you'd think that as a publisher...
You would want that.
You want that. You want to take advantage of that. People are talking about it.
Definitely.
And you're sitting on a book about it. How do you not put that out?
I mean, are publishers underestimating the impact that like tech and design writing can have? Like what?
Publishers are afraid of failure.
Yeah, they're afraid
that every
right?
book, every book that they're going to put out is going to fail.
Mm, that's not how you win.
No.
All right. So it sounds like you went without a publisher.
Well, I called myself a publisher.
Cool. What's your publishing company?
It was just Mule Books.
Cool.
And I published it myself through Amazon,
mm-hmm.
which is not, you know, my favorite of things to say,
because mm-hmm.
Amazon is so problematic in their own fucking way.
We all do our best to choose
as many non-horrible life paths as we can. But it's the reality of the world we live in. You have to do some bad things.
I mean, we talk. So first off, this was not a choice. I mean, ultimately, yes, I made the choice to do this. But my preference would have been, you know, going with a regular publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people talk about, you know, publishing houses like, you know, they're run by, you know, the Holy Sisters of Carmel.
Mm-hmm.
But these are things that have been handed down generationally to, you know, East Coast old money rich kids who have, you know, from the shallow end of the genetic pool.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like when you hear about like things in publishing that are related to money, there's either like if you own the newspaper, you're like the richest man in the world and you're king of the castle. But there's like I've never heard any story about anybody who works in publishing that makes more than like $20,000 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like it's pretty publishing sounds like the ultimate like one percenter structure for an industry.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like we're talking about angels when we're talking about publishers.
No,
there's like there's a giant difference between like, you know, supporting your local independent bookstore, mm-hmm. which I encourage everybody to,
mm-hmm.
and like supporting the publishing industry.
Yeah.
Which is just a different flavor of gigantic tool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I picked the gigantic tool that was Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And my book was out. Like, I went to like the Kindle on demand thing,
mm-hmm.
and explained, like, here's how you get a book made. It's going to look like a book. And my book looks like a book.
Yeah, it does. I have a copy of it in my home. It looks very book-like.
And
very convincing.
I got to lay it out
mm-hmm.
myself, which was kind of fun because I hadn't done like serious print layout in forever.
Yeah.
So I got to do that by myself. I hired an editor. I hired a proofreader. I hired an indexer.
Ooh, wow.
Because those are things that I cannot do.
Yeah.
And even if I could do, I shouldn't do.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do any of those things with your own book.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have a hard time with the, can I do this versus should I do this
right.
question.
And in all of those cases, it was both with me.
Mm-hmm.
I neither should have nor could have.
Yeah.
But no, I was lucky to find people who were very good at that stuff. I uploaded a PDF to Amazon. And they asked me if I wanted a proof of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, how much is a proof? And they said $3.50.
Wow. Just and, like get one book made?
Yeah.
You can just do that?
Yeah. And a couple of days later, my book showed up. I was holding
super
it in
cool.
my hands. And, you know, it had like big, ugly print on the cover that said, you know, proof copy not for sale.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was my book.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. So you made a book. It's
yeah.
like you didn't just write a book, you made a book.
Yeah.
That's so
and
cool.
Here's the other thing. And you know what? I'm going to be transparent and upfront about all of this. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's still a stigma with self-publishing. Like, you know, you tell somebody that you self-published a book and, you know, they think you, you know, went to hide in, you know, the Unabomber cabin. And then, you know, sat up and then stayed up all night at Kinko's.
Yeah.
Which is now not Kinko's.
Kinko's is not Kinko's anymore? Does Kinko's exist?
No, it's like FedEx print shop or...
I'm like having a hard time even remembering like what Kinko's logo looked like. Has it been erased from our memories?
It was like a weird colorful asterisk type thing, wasn't it?
Oh, that sounds
Or is
familiar.
That the new yeah. one?
I think that maybe the FedEx one incorporates that.
Maybe. Anyway, check this out.
Yeah,
check
yeah.
this out.
Check in.
So a publisher, if you are lucky,
mm-hmm.
a publisher will give you like a 40% cut of your sales.
All right. What about if you're regular and not lucky?
Well, I mean, that number can... I mean, I've talked to people who get 20%.
Mm-hmm. All right. 20% sounds realistic.
So you get 20% of your sales. If you're lucky, you get 40%. But wait, those publishing houses, the bigger publishing houses, will not talk to you unless you have an agent representing you.
Oh, interesting.
That agent wants 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So let's stay at the high end of the scale for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So subtract 15 from the 40 that you're getting, and you're at what, 25?
25, yeah.
So every book that you sell, you see 25% of that cost,
mm-hmm.
or 25% of that sale mm-hmm. is coming back to you.
All right.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
Amazon gives me 70%.
That's awesome.
70% on ebooks, 70% on paperbacks.
Yeah. How do you, so self-published on Amazon, how do you get the word out about your book? How do you market it? I mean, I guess
the publisher is
using your own Twitter account.
Tweet about it a lot.
Yeah.
Tweet about it a lot.
Have you ever done other, like, have you ever paid for ad campaigns, like Google ads
No.
or Twitter ads or anything like that?
No, I've, you know, it, that stuff, I think I thought about doing that stuff once and mm-hmm. I don't have anything against that.
Yeah.
It didn't feel right to me.
I tried one of them once. Like I put $10 into an ad account and like nothing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're like J.K. Rowling or Dan Brown or, mm-hmm. or, you know, Tom Clancy or one of those people,
mm-hmm.
a publisher is not going to put a giant marketing campaign up against your book.
Yeah.
They will make your book and they will get that book, maybe possibly, into some bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's where their commitment ends. I know, you know, I know people who had contracts with big publishing houses who had to hire their own editors.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Man.
It's an industry in disarray.
Yeah.
And since I was already talking about an industry in disarray,
mm-hmm.
I was happy to sidestep that particular
yeah.
dumpster fire.
Yeah.
Because I already had a dumpster fire to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it's proven successful for you.
It's done okay. You know what? I'm just going to tell you. It's been out 3.5 months.
Something like that.
A little over 7,500 copies.
Wow.
Which is
amazing.
Pretty good.
That's pretty
it's
good.
Pretty good.
I mean, I'm not doing the math on that or anything, but like, you can go to Disneyland.
Yeah, we're going to Disneyland right after this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that.
You could stay at the Grand Californian.
I'm not saying that to brag. The reason I'm being upfront with this is for all of those people who are sitting there with book ideas who have maybe been turned down by publishers
mm-hmm.
And who are, you know, feeling bad about themselves. Fuck that noise. Go do it. Get it out there. You can do this.
Yeah.
It's totally doable. And I mean, if you don't have the skills to lay a book out, you are going to know someone who does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll make that money back. Pay them.
Pay the people who help you in life.
But you'll make that money back.
Yeah.
And Amazon also puts my book on the Ingram database.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what that is. What is that?
Ingram database is the database that bookstores use to order books.
Oh, cool.
One of the main ones. Yeah. I think there's
so
two.
Bookstores can carry your book.
Bookstores can carry my book.
Uh-huh. Are they?
Some of them are.
Cool.
If you go to a local bookstore and ask for my book, they probably won't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them to order it, many of them will.
That's cool.
Now, some bookstores have an issue about carrying Amazon books.
Interesting.
Well, there's a little bit of spite there because, you know,
Amazon bookstores.
Yeah. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. But some of that is very real and financial. Amazon doesn't take returns. And if you run a bookstore, you got to be able to return unsold stock.
Yeah.
Or you're going to go broke.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally get that. This is not like paid advertisement mm-hmm. for Amazon self-publishing. But it worked for me.
That's great. And then Amazon like doesn't own any part of your book, right?
No.
So you could theoretically get your book printed in alternate ways.
Yes.
Right?
In fact.
What is it?
In fact, and by the time this podcast comes out, I'm hoping to be staring at these. I wanted to do a version of the book that wasn't touched in any way by Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it with a local press here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And I found one. I found a great little family-run press in Union City on the other side of the Bay. And they've been wonderful to work with. However, in order to pay that press, I had to get the money from the Amazon sales. Mm-hmm. But there is a version of Ruined by Design coming out that was run by a family press in Union City. I love that name. And it's printed on newsprint.
Fun.
It looks like, honestly, it looks like Maximum Rock and Roll. Mm-hmm. Like a zine. It's a zine.
It's great.
I'm making a zine version of the book. Everything in the book is there.
Uh-huh.
Including, I decided to make some collages where I make fun of Jack and Mark.
Jack who?
Dorsey.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
The dick that runs Twitter. You know who he is.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to.
So yeah, this zine version of Ruined by Design is I'm getting like 5,000 of those.
This really does sound like the ultimate like object de Montero. Like this really like an angry design book turned into a punk rock newspaper.
More excited about the zine than I am about the paper book, the paperback, to be honest.
Yeah. Think about all the things that you can do with the zine. You could wrap steak in it.
I know.
You can read it. You can make a hat. You can make a boat.
Yep.
What else can you do with the newspaper? You can make a collage.
It's 120 pages.
120-page newspaper. Wow.
Two column.
Uh-huh.
It's about 8x10. Mm-hmm. I made sure to get as much ink coverage on the cover as possible so that your hands were filthy from reading it.
That's so nice of you.
That's by design.
Yeah. Are you going to hire some newsies to like take the papes around to the city? Little hats and messenger bags?
You know, I have a newspaper bag.
Yeah.
From, you know.
What about the hat?
I don't have the hat, but I'm sure that I wonder if there's a place like on Valencia Street where I could buy a hipster newsboy cap.
Gurin Brothers.
Yeah, there it is. Not an ad. I'm super excited about the zine.
It's very exciting. And are you going to have a party?
You know, I never had a party for the actual book.
What the fuck? What are you doing?
Well, you know, it felt weird throwing my own party. Hint.
Okay. Well, we'll figure it out. Just set a date.
All right. So when the zine comes out, we're going to have a party.
Great.
There.
All right.
I still need to figure out what to charge for it.
For the zine.
Yeah, which I should have figured out before, you know, we started recording.
Yeah.
It's going to be less than the book.
All right. More than a cup of coffee.
Yeah. You know, and you know what? I'm just going to like drive by CCA, the design school, mm-hmm. and like just dump like a giant stack by their front door. Like I'm delivering the day's news.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
So I have tried, you know, just walking into bookstores and asking people if they'll carry the book. And what I found, this was the original impetus for this. The rules about what books they will keep on a shelf mm-hmm. are much, much tighter than the rules about what can go in the magazine rack.
Interesting.
Yep.
All right.
Like if you're some local weirdo who walks in and says, will you carry my zine? Mm-hmm. It's almost always a yes.
Oh, I wonder why that is. I get it, but that's interesting.
So when you ask if you'll carry, if they're willing to carry your book, they're like, no, we have deals with publishers about shelf space. That's why.
But zines and stuff, you can get around that. Know,
publishers are killing small bookstores as much as Amazon.
Yeah, I believe that. Because it's not like publishers aren't in with Amazon also, right?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, These little bookstores are getting it from both ends.
Yeah. I don't buy books from Amazon. I don't think I've ever ordered a book off Amazon before.
You know what? You know what? Where I like going to Green Apple.
Green Apple. Green Apple is great. And they have a record store next door, and there's good Asian food everywhere. Oh, my God.
And you know what? If you go in the morning, you can get, like, good food for breakfast. You know the Russian bakery that's, like, two blocks away?
I do, and I haven't been. I've seen it.
Cinderella.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that place. And then you go hang out at Green Apple all morning, and then you go have lunch somewhere.
Yeah. Well, previously, you would have lunch at Hong Kong Lounge, too, but it exploded. So you can't have lunch there anymore. Yeah, the city was like working on a gas line and they hit something and it exploded the restaurant and it completely destroyed it. Nobody was hurt, but Hong Kong Lunch 2 was killed and by extension, I was hurt.
What? Oh, okay.
Yeah, what a great place. I am very pro-Richmond.
I love the Richmond.
So nice.
It's a good immigrant neighborhood.
It's a great immigrant neighborhood. Everybody gets along. It's so quiet. Like
that. Nobody pays attention to the Richmond.
Yeah, and Clement is really cute. Like
Clement's adorable.
There's stuff you could go there and spend a whole weekend and like not run out of things.
And you know,
it's a
nice combination of like shops that have been there forever and like hipster shops that are just sprouting up.
Yeah, just a little. There's like Park Life, and then there's that giant like Chinese restaurant supply place that I've spent like 5 hours in before.
You know, we should probably not tell people about the Richmond in case.
Yeah, the Richmond is, it's very cold.
So cold. So foggy.
You can't get any fancy cocktails there.
No.
If you want a clear ice cube, go to the Mission.
There's no startup opportunities in the Richmond.
No, definitely not. There's no VCs in the Richmond.
I don't think they even, there's no avocado toast.
But, I mean, there might be like an avocado somewhere, but probably not.
No, not on toast.
Definitely not.
Yeah, just avoid the Richmond.
There's a lot of mean ladies in the Chinese restaurants.
Sure.
They won't be nice to you.
They will sticks.
Give you things that you didn't order.
Sticks.
Sticks, yes. Chopsticks. You know, I recently found out, this will be clear why I'm mentioning it, that that a lot of people, based on a Twitter poll that I ran, a lot of people don't know that I'm Chinese.
Really?
Yeah. 70% of people polled thought I was just like plain white. So now I realize like when I make fun of Asian stuff, not that I'm being racist about it.
It's
like,
still racist, Jesse.
What did I even say? Mean ladies in dim sum restaurants. That is something that I can say because I'm Chinese.
No, everybody who works at a dim sum restaurant is mean.
They should be.
I mean, that's part of the allure.
I don't trust dim sum restaurants with nice ladies. That means that they're overcharging you for the dumplings.
And I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying that as a benefit.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's a benefit too. But yeah, just in case any listeners out there are like, wow, Jesse keeps making Asian jokes. It's because I'm fucking Asian.
Jesse hates Asians.
Exactly. Hate myself.
But. It comes from self-loathing, so it's okay.
So it's okay, exactly.
I went to a dim sum place with somebody once, and before ordering anything, they pulled out a list of dietary restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the old lady just like threw some chicken feet on their plate. Whatever.
It's good for you.
Yeah.
All that collagen.
Yeah.
Keeps
chicken
you young.
Feet. Eat.
I don't personally like chicken feet.
Have you ever eaten a chicken foot?
Yeah.
What is it like? Do you like, is there bone in the middle?
Tiny little like Tic Tac sized bones. Uh-huh. So you like kind of, you bite it and then you just like, it's basically like skin and cartilage. So like really, but it's been slow cooked. So it's really fatty. So if you like eating like super fatty meat, it's kind of like that, but really you're just getting like sauce and melty chicken skin.
But there's a bone in the middle.
It's like all these tiny bones. And then you just kind of like gnaw and suck away all the fat, and then you just spit out the bones like little olive pits or something. So it's like, honestly, chicken feet aren't, it tastes good. Like people get so freaked out by it because they do look pretty morbid.
Oh, they look gnarly.
They look gnarly, but it's really just like, if you like chicken skin that's been soaked in sauce and like slow cooked for a super long time, like it's great. It's just a hassle to eat. And so I don't like ordering it.
Yeah, I'm not going to order it.
But I also don't like chicken wings. I don't like food that takes too much work, except for crab. What were we supposed to talk about again?
I think books? We were talking about books.
Oh, then we talking about Richmond, Green Apple Books.
Green Apple Books. So my zine's going to come out.
So your zine's going to come out.
It's probably already out. Mm-hmm. I got to figure out how to get it in people's hands.
Yeah. I mean, if only you had a storefront in your office.
Oh, shit. I do.
Yeah. We could have a Newsies pop-up.
Oh, my God. We could have a pop-up.
It could be like an old newsstand. We can sell gum and cigarettes. And
we're totally selling cigarettes.
Yeah.
Cigarettes and my ethics book.
Yeah.
Yes. And condoms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What else? Chocolate bars?
Well, I mean, the chocolate bar comes with the condom.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I know that. Lighters. Yeah. Lighters so that people can burn after reading.
Right.
Yeah. Do a newsstand pop-up. It'd be so great.
We need other magazines.
Yeah. And you need an angry proprietor.
Done. Oh, my God. Let's get Merlin.
Oh, Merlin.
I think he is running a magazine shop.
Really?
I mean, that's what I picture him doing.
Merlin seems almost too chatty and friendly for a magazine shop owner. I could see him owning a record shop. Something that requires talking a lot to customers about what everything is.
Oh, yeah. I could see him in a record shop.
He's a comic shop person.
No, right? They're meaner.
Yeah, that's
true. No, comic shop owners are the white guy version of the dim sum ladies.
Wow.
That's so many listeners are wondering if that was racist.
That's a really flattering comparison. Flattering for the comic book owner.
Yeah,
comic shop
maybe.
Owner.
Maybe it's too flattering.
I think it's too flattering.
It's okay.
Yeah. They're their own. They're a record shop owner who doesn't get laid.
Wait,
does that mean
to
say? Can
shop?
I say that? I don't know. I
feel say get laid.
I feel like people who own record shops, they're cool and they're super nerdy
they
know a bunch of stuff. But I think that they have a better chance.
Well, I mean, that's like saying that that one dog has a better chance of operating a doorknob than another dog.
Or cat.
Or a raccoon has a better chance of operating a doorknob than a cat.
Raccoons probably can operate doorknobs.
Yeah, they're like humans who with spells, like witches' spells. Like they used to be human and then a witch put a spell on them. And now you're a raccoon.
Interesting.
Eat trash, be free, turn doorknobs.
Yeah.
Wash everything.
Was this a good witch or a bad witch?
I don't know. I mean, is life as a raccoon that bad?
I mean, I think it depends on where you're a raccoon.
Fair enough. But that's true for all of us, right?
It's very true.
I mean, you could be a human in Cleveland.
Yeah. I've never even been to Cleveland.
Oh, now the Cleveland people are mad at us.
Where is Cleveland? I didn't learn geography in school.
Well, it's by a lake.
Okay, cool. I know where New York is, and I know where LA and Seattle are.
Oh my, okay, so
triangle.
All right,
I've heard of Florida.
Yeah,
that's the dick one.
America's dick.
Yeah, or knockoff California.
America's syphilitic dick.
Uh huh.
Cleveland is in Ohio.
Okay, and that's somewhere in the middle.
Ohio. Well, it's not that in the middle. So, okay, coming in from the Atlantic.
Sure.
You're gonna hit Jersey.
Okay.
Then Pennsylvania.
Uh huh.
And then Ohio.
Oh, wow. So that's pretty far over to the other side.
That's not that far. I mean, Pennsylvania is pretty long.
Oh, is it long?
Okay. And well, I mean, it's long by East Coast standards.
I don't know anything. Why am I so dumb? You know what they taught us in Washington schools was Washington state history.
Didn't you grow up in a van full of Pomeranians?
It was an RV and we didn't live there.
But the Pomeranians were real.
Oh, yeah, they were real.
Yeah.
And there was an RV. And I, yes.
And you traveled around in an RV full of Pomeranians.
Just to move from Southern California to Washington and then camping sometimes. The only vacations that my family took.
How many Pomeranians were there?
They probably maxed out at 15, 12 to 15. My mom was a breeder.
That's an incredibly impressive amount of Pomeranians.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't all pets. Again, my mom bred Pomeranians.
Wait a minute. So, what other classification is there for Pomeranian other than pet?
Well, you know, when you breed them, like, you know, you just have like these litters of puppies.
Is it, wait, is this like a pets or meat scenario? Pets or meat?
No, they were intended to be sold. So like they were not wasn't that we had like 15 permanent dogs.
Uh-huh.
It would just like, I think that of the perma dogs, it was like maybe 5 of them.
So they bred them.
Yeah.
Four or five were actual char family pets.
Yeah. So you have like, there was like the old family dog Gizmo.
Uh-huh.
She stayed out of it. She was just family pet. And then we had the stud.
Her breeding time was over.
Yeah. She wasn't.
She was like the madam.
She was just hanging out, having a nice time. But then, you know, we have Spot.
Having drinks with the big rollers.
So you have the stud. And then you have a series of bitches. And and you just like do a little rotation. And then you get a bunch of little like tiny things that look like miniature guinea pigs.
What do you get for a Pomeranian?
A lot of money.
Like, what's a lot of money? And like, I what kind of ballpark are we talking?
I want to say that, I don't want to butcher that. My mom's probably listening to this. I don't know. I haven't told her about
it yet.
Your
mom listens to this?
I didn't, you know what?
Hi, Mrs. Char.
I didn't tell her that any episodes have been released, but I'm sure that she's found it and is listening. So I know that like Pomeranians like, you know, fetch like for a good one is like maybe $1,200. Like maybe that's average.
Okay. So in the grand.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely over a grand.
Okay.
And this is like a while ago.
Purebred Pomeranian.
20 years ago. Purebred and like special coloring that you have to like achieve through
with
like
papers.
Well, yeah, with papers, champion lineage.
Yeah, no illegal Pomeranians
in
Jesse's RV.
It's all regulation. Yeah, my mom also used to show one of them.
Really?
Yeah, like running around in a square with a tiny dog that prances.
So how many Pomeranian puppies were in a litter?
I want to say like you get like 4 to 6.
We're in the wrong business.
Trust me, you don't want to be a Pomeranian breeder. It's a weird business.
Well, it sounds fairly lucrative though.
It's lucrative, but the thing is like you can't just like the way that it works isn't you just like let the dogs run around and then like nature takes its course.
How many litters can a bitch turn around in a year?
Probably 2.
All right. And with 6 puppies per litter.
I mean, that's max.
4 to 6.
And like not all the
Let's average it out to 5.
Yeah.
So, okay, one bitch is giving me 10 puppies a year.
Yeah.
Which I'm selling for at least $1,000.
Yeah.
Now I get me a little stable of them, like say half a dozen. my stable of half a dozen Pomeranian bitches.
Are you starting a ranch?
I'm thinking about
it. Ranch? Here's the thing about it though. Is it like that? You have to.
I knew we couldn't stay on top.
Like you have to manually like mate the dogs.
Go on.
You have to physically facilitate the act that they perform in order to create the puppies. It's so gross.
How?
Usually, it takes 2 people hold each dog.
You have to. Oh.
That's how dog breeding works. Ladies and gentlemen and everything in between.
Not all dog breeding.
Well, I mean, like a lot of like accident puppies happen when like, you know, in, you know, street dogs and whatnot.
Can't you? Oh, let's get real for a second.
Yeah.
Can't you artificially inseminate the female Pomeranian?
How would you plan on obtaining the semen for the insemination?
Online? Wait a minute.
I don't think you should quit your writing job anytime soon, Mike.
Wait, so much is making sense to me now. So you grew up watching your parents.
Well, my dad wanted nothing to do with this.
Okay. That I don't know if that helps, but you grew up watching your mom
facilitate. Yeah.
Pomeranian sex where she's holding one palm and then pressing the other palm
against. I'm going to get so many texts from her and she's going to be like, you got it all wrong.
No, we're going to do better than that. We're going to have Mrs. Char on the show.
No.
Yes, we are.
She can talk all about animals because there's a lot more that you don't know.
Josie's pushing one palm.
No, you're not actually like, but you do just kind of have to, you know, like they're dogs. So it's just like, they might just like go for like a pump and then just like get hungry and go somewhere else. But you need them to finish the deal. So it's really just like kind of holding them in place and making sure that sparks fly.
But don't you have to like cause a little friction there?
No, the dogs can do that. You just want to make sure that they don't get distracted before it's over and go somewhere else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the dogs can figure out the mechanics.
They can figure out the mechanics, but it's really just like you kind of have to monitor them and like get the deal.
So wait,
sealed.
would she just like hover over the dogs, wait for two of them to start having sex and then jump on them and hold them in place?
Okay, so here's another part of this is that often
she's so texting you.
Yeah,
about
so
this.
Often when breeding dogs, like you something that's essential is genetic diversity, right? Uh-huh. So that they don't end up all weird. But with purebred dogs,
so that they're not a tech startup.
Yeah, exactly. So one palm breeder will partner with another one, and they'll be like, okay, so like we're gonna mix my stud with your bitch. And like I get pick of the litter and you get second pick of the litter and the rest of them are mine, or like you pay a stud fee. That's what it's called. And so like sometimes it's like two breeders who are like breeding one, like, you know, each of them have a dog involved. The dogs don't know each other. And so like they just kind of have to like push them together. Like the dog has to be in heat. So like the male dog is going to be interested and like jump on that. And then like sometimes the lady dog freaks out for obvious reasons. And
sure.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm not hearing the word consent.
No, 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 no. Definitely not a consensual.
Nature is frightening.
Nature's weird. Dog breeding isn't nature.
That's fair.
That's eugenics.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's crazy.
I think we could do a whole season of this show
based on
this.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't even told you yet about how my mom was also the head of the Possum Rescue Society.
Holy fuck. What? Okay. I have so many questions. Starting with, what are you rescuing possums from?
This was, in the early 90s in Orange County.
Wait, you say that like that explains something.
I don't know. I'm just...
You remember the early 90s when megafauna ruled the world?
I don't know. I think it was Orange County. There wasn't really a lot of nature anywhere. So like sometimes you live in a place where like you get to save something fun, like the spotted owl, but
sure.
We didn't have the spotted owl. This is Santa Ana. They're possums.
Oh my God. You got stuck saving possums.
Everyone needs a cause, Mike.
Oh my God. You were like the kids who had pro kids instead of Converse.
Yeah. So we had foster possums. So like, so when I was a little kid, I just like have these like baby possums in my pocket.
You did
like,
not.
They like rope their little tiny tails onto your finger and like they're very friendly.
Wait, is this happening at the same time as the Pomeranians?
This is pre-pom breeding.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think we had one palm gizmo.
So possums were like a gateway drug.
Oh, I'd say that the show Green Acres was the gateway drug. Possums, you know, my mom just really liked animals. Like we also had an actual rabbit situation.
Who hasn't?
Were like chickens. I think that we had a sheep at some point. Like I woke up one morning and there was a horse in our backyard. That was a whole thing. Wasn't our horse. Orange County doesn't explain it. Makes it more confusing, doesn't it?
Is this a rural address or a suburban address?
Oh, it was the cul-de-sac.
So
we lived at the end of the
cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm picturing a typical suburban cul-de-sac like you would see on TV.
Yeah, like less nice, like a suburban cul-de-sac that was like cased by gang members and stuff like that.
Like did it back up against the woods or something?
Oh, no. It backed up against more houses.
Okay.
No, this was 10 minutes away from Disneyland.
Okay.
We could watch the fireworks from our backyard.
All right. So you had a backyard.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that there was fencing
Yeah.
between the backyards.
Yeah.
And then after your backyard was somebody else's backyard and then their house.
And then somebody else's house and then somebody else's backyard and so on and so forth okay. forever. Yeah.
So you're not out in the middle of, you're not out in bumfuck.
No, there were no parks. It was just cul-de-sacs. Cul-de-sac. That's the proper plural.
And into this environment wanders a horse.
Do we have time to tell the horse story or should we save that for the next episode?
How long is the horse story?
It's not that long. My mom.
I think we end on the horse story.
Okay, so hopefully I will get this one right. So my mom is always perusing.
By the way, Jesse's mom, email me.
No, she didn't.
No, please email me.
No, oh.
We want to get you on the show.
No. No. Okay, so my mom is always perusing like the animal classified section. She's clearly, as we have established through story, she's an animal person.
You know, up till 10 seconds ago, I didn't know that animal classifieds were a thing.
Oh, yeah.
But okay.
Yeah. And you always, you know, you see some weird stuff, like a lot of exotic animals and a lot of free kittens. But like my mom was always in it for the like, what's the one weird thing that I'll finally see in the animal classifieds.
Right.
And one day, I'm pretty sure it's classifieds. I don't think it was a flyer. Maybe it was a flyer. Anyway, one day she comes across a thing and it's just like lost. My child, like, and it was basically a description of a horse this woman referred to as her baby or her child. And she was beside herself and like she had put out.
Love is where you find it.
Yeah. So anyway, it was just like disappeared. And this lady was super upset and she put out some sort of flyer or ad for it. My mom reads it, of course. I think that my mom and dad were like out. They were working. They are both musicians. They'd play gigs together. They were like driving home from a gig. Passing like a 7-Eleven or something. And my mom looks over and there's like a trailer with a horse in it parked at the 7-Eleven. And my mom was like, that's the horse. And my dad is like, Bonnie, that's not the horse. We're going home. And she's like, no, that's the horse. And so she.
Was there a picture of the horse on the flyer?
I don't know. I think it may have just been a description, but there maybe there's a picture.
Okay. So this could just be gut instinct. Which turned out to be right.
Yeah. Well, my mom has a lot of gut instincts, and because they're right 5% of the time, she now fancies herself a know-it-all. Anyway,
were you about to say medium?
No, because it's not mystical. She just
God damn it.
Knows that she's right about everything. So anyway, like my mom is just like. Fuck you, husband. We're pulling over. And so like, I think they pull over. Like my mom calls the cops. She's like, I found the horse. And it turns out it was the horse.
God.
But it's like the middle of the night.
I love that she just calls the cops and says, I found the horse. like the entire OC police force is out on a horse hunt.
I don't know. I'm mixing up the details, but the spirit of the story is accurate, whatever the actual details are. So anyway, for what, you know, it's late at night and like lady can't get her horse right now. And like the horse can't be taken into like police custody or whatever. And so they're just like, what are we going to do with this horse? Cause like we found it. These people had stolen it, but like we need it to go somewhere.
Wait a minute. What happened to the people who stole the horse?
They were there and got caught, I believe.
Okay.
So like, there's like, my mom is not afraid of confrontation. Like she stayed there until like somebody was able to like come and address the situation in an official capacity.
So OCPD grabbed the horse thieves or horse rustlers.
Sure. I don't know.
Took them in.
Yeah.
Leaving Bonnie with a horse.
With a horse. Yeah. So my mom was like, of course, we can take the horse for the night.
Well, obviously.
So then I wake up the next morning in Santa Ana, California, and just outside of her door, which is like has a little window on it. There's just a fucking horse in the backyard. It's a very confusing situation. Being a Southern California person.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be at least confused.
Yeah. And the lady who got her horse back was very appreciative. And,
well, I mean, you figure one would be.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a Bonnie Char animal rescue, true pet detective, really.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
What an amazing episode this was.
Yeah. And that's why I've never seen Best in Show. I was never allowed to watch it.
Really? You still haven't seen it? You know, she can't stop you now.
I know, but now it feels like important to who I am.
All right. I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, the actual stories mm-hmm. are better than watching somebody's movie.
Yeah. That's why maybe it'd be underwhelming for me.
Yeah.
And I prefer it to stay like an intriguing mystery that I'll never get to experience.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, hell of a show.
Yeah.
Tune in next time when we're going to have Bonnie Char, Pet Detective, on.
and look out for this zine.
Yeah, this zine. Yeah, I'll have more information on it in the next one, but it's real. Check on Twitter. I'll be talking about it. If you go to ruinedby.design, there'll be information there about it as soon as it's for sale. It's going to be priced to move, and I especially encourage students and folks starting out to grab this, and that's it.
All right.
And hey, $5 fans.
Oh yeah, $5 fans. If you would like to have your name butchered by us on the podcast in a strange voice that somebody does for us, you can go to patreon.com/
Make Mistakes.
Let's Make Mistakes.
Let's Make Mistakes.
You can go to Mike's or my Twitter account.
We're such pros.
And we will have recently posted about
it. We're such pros.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Have a fantastic day. And I hope whatever you do next is as much fun as this.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.